How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It's October 27th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. He's back! Lance Storm has returned to the show today. It's been three, four weeks since he's been on the program last, and a million different things to talk about. And Lance, I think as some people are aware, not the best week for you, but how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Certainly not one of the better weeks. For those who don't know, my stepdad had a heart attack and passed away on Tuesday, completely out of the blue. It's actually a bit of an amazing story in that he and my mom, they've got a winter place in Florida that they go down to, and I talked to them both on Monday, and they're like, yeah, we're heading out tomorrow. So they were heading out Tuesday morning, and Tuesday late afternoon, early evening, I get a call from my mom. And again, it came up on caller ID that she's calling from her house. So as soon as I said hello and I heard her voice, I'm like, what happened? And they had just only gotten about an hour or two down the road. They were in Barrie, driving south from North Bay, so maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours tops. And he was driving, you know, he's got a big truck and we're pulling their boat, which is quite huge, like they sleep on it. It's like, I don't know if it's 25 or 27 foot, you know, decent sized boat. And they were in the fast lane, booting down the highway, having a conversation. And my mom heard my stepdad say, oh my God. And she looked over and they were heading for the guardrail. He had his eyes closed and his head back. And she managed to grab the wheel and steer across three lanes of traffic and get pulled over onto the ditch. And thankfully we're slowing down enough at that point that she managed to, you know, crawl across and practically sit in his lap so she could reach the brake and get the vehicle stopped. Probably avoided a 20 or 30 car pileup on the highway by, keeping her wits about her. And as soon as they got pulled over, I guess another lady pulled over behind them. So she called 911 where my mom tried to do CPR and she figured she was dead before they got pulled off the highway. He had after when the paramedics took him to the hospital and so forth, they said massive heart attack, like just probably dead with, you know, almost instantly.
Wow.
But yeah, my mom's really fortunate that she didn't end up dying in a nasty car accident. And she said, oddly enough, you know, because I said, you know, pulling the boat, I'm amazed you managed. She said, if it wasn't for the boat, we probably would have been in a pileup. Just that the boat itself is so big that cars tend to keep a wide berth and give you a bit more room.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she had to, you know, it's a pretty busy chunk of highway. You know, it's 60 miles an hour speed limit. And he's in the fast lane having to cross three lanes to get off the road. She's really fortunate. And, you know, they've been together, again, he's my stepdad. So, again, both her and he were divorced, but they've been together 24 years now, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, longer than they've been with, she was with my dad. So yeah, she's pretty devastated to say the least. And again, if anyone remembers, it was just a year ago that, my grandfather died. So she just lost her dad a year ago and her husband on Tuesday. So it's really hard for my mom and I'm hating that I'm so far away, more than anything else. And I was pretty tight with Mike too. I was a hell of a lot closer to him than I was to my dad. That, you know, this one's hit me a hell of a lot harder than last year's did. So it's going to be rough. We head to Ontario, late next week. The service, is next weekend, not the one coming up, but the one following on the 5th of November, I guess. So I've got to, work on a eulogy and a speech. I spoke at my grandfather's and with all the, again, another horrible thing about the business is my experience with dealing with loss. My mom's read a lot of my tribute commentaries and thinks I do them really well, which is why she wanted me to do my grandfather's, and she wanted me to do Mike's, so I'm going to be working on that this week, which is going to be really hard, but if I find it a good process, I enjoy getting all of my emotions out, and I do it best when I write, so I'm going to be working on that probably this weekend. But he was 68, almost 69. His birthday would be in a few weeks, but only 68. Again, oddly enough, just the same age as my dad was when my dad died, so... But he was overweight, and we've been on him for years that he needs to take better care of himself, and unfortunately he's no longer with us.
Well, very sad. Very, very sorry to hear that. And I don't want to say, oh, well, the good news is, but it is good news that your mom managed to do what she did. Miracle, almost.
Yeah, it is. Because realistically speaking, you know, we could have lost her and three or four other innocent people on the highway if she hadn't kept her shit together. It's pretty amazing, and she managed to hold it together. So thankfully, I still got my mom. So
it's almost exactly what happened with Randy Savage. In fact,
yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. But when I had I was texting with Jericho. And his, you know, because Jericho knew that Mike and I were pretty tight. You know, Jericho knew Mike. Again, if you haven't connected the dots, Mike's my stepdad. Because Mike came to the very first Smoky Mountain TV taping that Chris and I did. He was driving to Florida for something and made his arrangements to stop by. So he, you know, took Jericho and I out to dinner and then went to the first Smoky Mountain TV taping in Dungannon, Virginia, if I remember correctly.
Dungannon?
I believe so. Virginia was, you know, probably a smaller population than, you know, your street. And we ran a show there.
You sure it's not called Gannon, but it's the South, so they say it Dungannon?
Could be. But yeah, Mike came to a lot of our shows. He came to a lot of the ECW shows when we were in Florida or in Buffalo. You know, came to WWE shows in Toronto and Montreal. So, you know, there's a half a dozen of the boys that had met him, and Jericho knew we were tight, and when I told him he had a heart attack driving, his first words, it's like, oh, just like Savage.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, I hadn't actually thought of that, but it was. Again, thankfully, my mom managed to avoid a heart attack. But, yeah, Mike was a big part of my wrestling career as far as being supportive of me, and I was just actually thinking about it last night. The first real sort of acceptance, or I remember it being a big step because my mom had started dating him. And my first experience with him, he showed up drunk at our doorstep one time. Mike was a big partier. And I don't have a big tolerance for people when they're drunk. So this guy who just started dating my mom, showing up at the door at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, drunk out of his tree. I was not enamored with Mike when I first met him. And he owned a TV and furniture store. And he had a big, you know, 10-foot projection TV on his wall. And I'd heard about the TV and had saw it. And this was just before the first main event, the Friday night main event, the one they did, the Hogan-Andre with the twin refs.
Oh, yeah, 88.
88. And I managed to muster up the nerve to ask him if there was any chance I could bring some buddies over so we could watch this. Because this was, you know, big deal to us. We were, you know, huge wrestling fans, and this was a big show.
Sure.
And the thought of seeing it on a 10-foot screen was pretty cool for us. And Mike was always all about having fun and making sure everybody enjoyed themselves. So he was like, absolutely, bring all your friends, make it a party. And we watched that show at his house. And I remember sort of feeling really weird showing up to this guy's house that I didn't know particularly well. But damn it, I wanted to see this wrestling show on his 10-foot screen. And even when I made the decision to get into wrestling, again, it wasn't too long after my parents split up. And, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of cash, and neither did my mom. And so the thought of quitting university and embarking on this wrestling career, you know, I was a bit nervous. And I remember when I was in university trying to make the decision, I had actually came home on the train and went and met him at work. And by this time, I, you know, got pretty close with Mike. You know, I'd lived with him for a while. And I remember meeting him in his office and saying, this is what I really want to do. Not sure I can afford starting out, how rough it's going to be. And basically asked, you know, my mom said she can support, you know, she supports my efforts and stuff. But, you know, realistically, I don't know how much financial support she can offer. You know, it would basically asking if he would back me as well. And he was, you know, absolutely, I'm completely in your corner. If this is what you want to do, go do it. So if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And then again, he supported me and showed up to a lot of events and was always really supportive. So yeah. He was a big part of my career and my life. So,
well, that's got a lot of stuff to write about in the next couple of weeks. And are you going to put the eulogy up on the site at some point? Is that going to be the plan? Or is it something that you figure, this is for the family, so I'm just going to keep it in the family?
I'm going to ask my mom. I may do two. I think because he was such a big part of my wrestling career, too, I'll probably if my mom doesn't want the one on the site, I'll do a separate one.
Sure.
Just dealing a little bit more with what he meant to me in my wrestling career.
Sure.
Because I'll obviously need to cover a little bit more than my wrestling career for his service and so forth. But I'm going to get one up for the site, I think, for sure, because there's a lot of good wrestling tales and stuff there, because he came to a lot of shows and had a lot of fun. He was actually... he was the one that came up with the idea of the upside-down American flag for the un-Americans.
Really?
When we were trying to... Because when we first started doing the gimmick, the office was really big on, we don't want you guys looking like a team. We don't want matching outfits. We don't want you all to get the same tights and everything else, but we want some kind of common thread, some kind of, again, logo or something. And we were trying to think of stuff, and I don't remember if I was in Ontario or whether I was just talking to Mike on the phone, saying that they want something, and he had suggested, and again, he was a big boater, so that's where he probably got the idea of the upside-down flag, because it's the symbol of distress. And he has suggested the upside-down flag, and I had pitched it to Steph, and then she liked it, and that's when they come out with the un-American shirts for us with the upside-down flag.
How about that?
It was actually Mike, yeah, it was my stepdad, so he's contributed to something on Raw.
Huh. Well, there you go. So your mom, just to go back very quickly, your mom reads a lot of your commentaries?
Yeah, she's always, again, because she's in Ontario, she's a long way away, she always likes to keep up on stuff, so she... again, less now because she's even busier, but she, for the longest time, was, you know, always visiting my site and reading them, just as, again, as a means by which to stay in better touch with me, sort of a pre-Facebook age. You know, I'd post what I'm doing on my site so she could read it.
Sounds like Granny.
Exactly.
Monitoring you and then giving you a guilt trip about it later? She avoid
my mom's
that part.
My mom's not as big on the guilt trips as Granny is.
That's good. That's good. Well, listen, we're going to talk about Wrestling Reality Project, but since we're talking about on this subject, a couple of updates on good news. Carl Cox is apparently doing better. Last night on the show, we talked about his heart attack last Thursday, and he had not woken up yet. And that sounded very bad. But apparently he woke up today. They said, this is all on the front page right now, he is not staying up for long periods of time, but his kidneys are fine. The pacemaker is apparently doing well, so that is a positive update. And I don't know what happened this afternoon. Some people on my Twitter are asking about this because they don't understand why I posted what I did. But this afternoon, word broke that Jerry Briscoe had died. And I believe that Diamond Dallas Page tweeted it. And I don't know where he got the story or what he was told, but it went everywhere. I had all sorts of people texting me and calling me, what happened to Jerry? Is Jerry okay? What's the Jerry update? Is Jerry? I hear Jerry died. And suffice to say, Jerry Briscoe is fine. I don't know what happened to get that rumor started, but he is fine. So that is good news there as well. And one last thing I just thought I would mention, we could probably... talk about this for quite a while, but on WWE.com, John Cena noted that the jorts are history. He will no longer be wearing jean shorts of the ring. It's military shorts from now on, and I don't know, Lance, how big a story is this?
It's not a big story I'm going to pay a whole lot of attention to. again, he's still going to be wearing sneakers and shorts, I assume. So,
well, the camo shorts.
The camo shorts, so I guess it's a little bit something different.
The reason I ask how big a story is it is that, you know, John Cena's hated. You know, he's really hated by a lot of people. And everyone's always trying to figure out, why is it? Is it that he's not a great wrestler? Is it the fact that he's shoved down our throats? Is it the fact that he wears jean shorts? People actually bring that up as a possibility of one reason that he's hated so much. And the jean shorts are now history. So I was just wondering if you thought that was one of the big reasons.
Although it's funny, I remember Jericho once a while ago mentioning something that, you know, he thought in endorsing a little bit more of a traditional wrestling look might gain him a bit more acceptance, although I don't think camo shorts from jean shorts is a big enough difference. There's something where, again, I think the more traditional, and again, I think I would be an example of that, you know, that's a little bit more traditional and likes, again, your wrestlers to be technically sound and your matches to be psychologically sound, and guys to actually, you know, wear tights and boots and look like a wrestler. So I think, you know, the sneakers and the jean shorts on top of, you know, not the most technically sound, shall we say, I don't want to say he can't work, because obviously he's had good matches and he's done really well. But as far as a, we won't call him a technician in the ring.
No.
I think is safe. So when you add all that up, there's, I can see a lot of the traditionalists, you know, thinking, okay, he's technically not very good. He doesn't even dress like a wrestler. He walks around in shorts and sneakers. But I don't think camo shorts from jean shorts is a big change.
All right, let's talk about Wrestling Reality Project. I don't know how much of this you can actually talk about, but you were there for the entire set of tapings. And when you came out of it, how are you feeling about how this is going to... I mean, all of your own personal feelings aside, because obviously if you thought the whole thing sucked, I don't think you'd come out here and say that. But your personal feelings aside as to how you think this whole project is going to work out in terms of being released on Netflix and however they're going to release it, and just the way it was put together is something completely different from your average wrestling program. Do you see this being a success, or is it too early for a concept like this?
Well, the big thing I want to point out is you're getting the name wrong. It's Wrestling Revolution Project is the name that they were using, although that will change.
Wrestling Revolution Project, I'm sorry.
Yes, because Wrestling Reality was a reality show done up in Eastern Canada.
That's right, yes.
Although I believe the name is going to change. I think there's some legal issues over using the Revolution title, so he's going to have to change it to some. I think he's keeping the initials the same, because we had banners and stuff, and they had WRP, and I think they're just going to change what the R stands for. And, of course, someone, again, probably knowing my history and involvement in the project, joked that it could be Wrestle and Romance from the WAR days in Japan. But I don't believe he's going with Romance. And also, too, just one of the... I really liked Jeff Katz. I got a lot of respect for him. And one thing that I really liked is, you know, I wrote my Fighting Spirit column about the shoot. And I told Jeff, you know, I just, you know, I'm going to write it, you know, just let me know if there's anything specifically you want me to say. And he's right up front. He says, if you think it sucks, feel free to say it sucks. If you think I'm an idiot, feel free to tell me, you know, just say what you feel.
He's definitely not an idiot.
No, he's not. And the project is by far does not suck. But it's nice to have someone that's willing to, well, if you think something's stupid, say so. If you think something's shitty, say so, which is a real refreshing thing. And it was really unique, and I have no idea whether it can be a success, because I don't even know, with the way it's distributed and the financing and how he got it, I have no idea at what level it becomes a success. But I think it will be very entertaining, and I think it will probably be very good. Again, I say probably because there's a lot of it I didn't get to see. Again, because it was very much, you know, he had sent me a pretty good outline as far as, okay, this is episode 1 through 13. You know, these are the main points we're getting across in episode 1. But as far as all of the exact details of the pre-tapes and the introductory video packages and the interviews and all the different stuff, I didn't have all the details on everything specifically. So I had the, you know, okay, there's going to be all these pre-tapes that will explain this and this, and I had the overall picture. And then, obviously, the incredibly huge and long list of matches that we need to shoot. So the majority of what I was involved in and had to was really, again, early on we did some Skype conferences and stuff, and I, you know, he sent me the first script, and I read through it. I'm like, okay, well, why exactly are we doing this? And he'd explain it, and I'd either agree or go, okay, well, maybe we could, you know, you need a bit better of an explanation, and he'd come back with something. So we altered a little bit script-wise early on. But once we actually got there, a lot of it was just the, okay, we need to divide these matches up in this order so that these guys can get this stuff done in a day. And then obviously help trying to give the finishes, give people the idea on what they need to do and what they not need to do. And then getting them all done in the time frame, which was really quite complicated because we tried to shoot it in order as much as we could, but we couldn't shoot it all in order, especially because MVP, who was in the shoot, wasn't there the first day of matches. So, again, obviously anyone that was wrestling MVP early on in the series had to do it, their stuff out of order. So, again, from an agenting standpoint, continuity was a big issue, and I think we managed to hold pretty tight on it as far as remembering, okay, this is actually an episode 4. You guys haven't split up yet. Make sure that you remember that, you know, this other stuff hasn't happened yet. So you're still a babyface. This is your motivation at this point in time. The match yesterday isn't going to air till after. So there's a lot of that we had to really keep on tight. And then also, too, because I ended up running Gorilla ended up being the majority of what I was doing when the matches were going on, to make sure everybody was on time and reminding people, you know, to work the hard camera, because the people were, there was no actual fans hard camera side. Because of the way we were shooting it, for the duration and so forth, they had, again, some fans, some paid extras, and so forth, and we had them all strategically placed to maximize our camera shoot, that it's hard for guys, especially if you haven't done it a lot, to remember that you can have your back to your entire fan base here, because the cameras are where the majority of the viewers are going to be. So reminding people of that and giving time cues and keeping on time. And you've probably heard the horror stories of, you know, Jerry Briscoe or, you know, now Billy Kidman trying to keep a show on time when guys go over and under. It's even harder to keep track of it when you're not shooting the matches in order. So I'm trying to keep track of, okay, this is, you know, we're shooting episode one today, and you realize, okay, these three matches went short. And MVP's episode one is, you know, we're going to shoot that in 2 days from now. I'll have to remember to give him a little bit extra time. And then, okay, these two matches went heavy. They're episode seven. What else is episode seven? Okay, we've got to trim some time out of this. So there was a lot of detail that we had to really keep tight on. And we ended up shooting 63 matches in 3 days. The first day we shot 27 matches. So it was quite the assembly line.
Now, I was told in terms of the matches that... And I should note, I didn't hear any of this from you, and that is actually a true story. I heard in terms of the matches that the first day was a lot of squashes, and then second and third day, obviously the best matches took place on the last day. So basically the work in the ring got better with each successive taping, because that's the way it went in the storyline. Is that basically the story here?
That's fairly accurate, yeah. We tried to kick out all of the squashes the first day. We didn't. We had a couple we had to do the second day. But again, we say we had, 18 squash matches. Get it? We still had 7 or 8 legitimate competitive matches to shoot the first day. So we kicked out all the squashes we could, and then kicked out the any other competitive matches we could that day. And then the second day was, okay, there was a couple squashes we had to pick up, primarily because, again, MVP wasn't there the first day. And then, again, the bulk of the middle of the season stuff. But the last day was, again, the last day there was a few matches throughout the season to do, but also to the finale episode, which is the two-hour episode, which obviously is going to be your biggest and the blow-off matches and all the important stuff was the last day. And again, trying to get as much of stuff out of the way early that day so that the guys had a little bit of time to put, you know, more thought and effort into their last matches. But the talent, there was a lot of really talented guys, and they really rose to the occasion, because, you know, I know us as agents didn't have as much time to be with them and make sure their matches were laid out well and make sure they were giving all the extra advantages they could, that we were so busy getting, you know, just the show going and getting that assembly line moving with me keeping them on time and Chris running around and making sure the next guys know what they're doing and they're on deck, and Dreamer running around basically trying to put out any fire where if there's questions, he's dealing with that, and then he's helping, you know, Jeff with, okay, this, you know, shot's not right, we need to get the cameras over here. And we were running around doing so much as far as organizing the shoot as producers and even directors at a time, that the boys really had to step up. And for having as little notice as they did a lot of times with, okay, you just finished this match, you know, in three more matches, you got to go again. The boys really stepped up and really put out some really good matches. I think there was only, I would say, again, out of these 63 matches, there was only maybe 3 or 4 that I think need to be cleaned up in editing. And with the exception of one, they were squash matches where the guys getting squashed were not particularly good. So there was some botches and stuff that'll have to get, you know, fixed in post and edited and so forth. But out of the, again, God, I don't even know how many, you know, 40-some competitive matches, there was only one that I felt fell apart a little bit. And that was, you know, actually partially due to a ref. So the boys really stepped up, and there was a lot of really good workers. And I think on the whole, the angles and stuff, the way it was done, was a really interesting and neat approach. And again, the promos and stuff that I did see were good. So it'll be really interesting to see how it all comes together. And there's a lot of guys I had never seen before that I was really impressed with.
Now, an obvious question, you don't have to give details necessarily, but I got reports from people that were there as fans. When you're shooting I forget how many matches. It's 67. How many matches did you do over 3 days?
63
matches over 3 days. All right, obviously, you know, when you've scripted out 3 days or however many weeks worth of storylines, you're shooting them in 3 days, you know, stuff can go wrong. Were there any disasters? Anything you would say was a disaster? Like somebody got broke. I don't think anybody broke a leg. We'd have heard about it. But let's just say that somebody broke a leg and you had to switch everything about. Was there anything you would consider a disaster in terms of this, or did it go remarkably smoothly?
Actually, it went really well. I was really worried about injuries, especially because originally it was going to be shot a lot more out of order. Again, it was Jeff really thinking that, you know, if we can try not to have someone have to do too many competitive matches in 1 day, so he's trying to spread the squashes out over the 3 days, so you might only have to do a squash match, you know, a multiple-man match, and then a big match, you know, in 1 day. But, you know, logistic-wise, we ended up trying to just get all the squash stuff out of the way because we had to bring in the extras and so forth, so using them in 1 day worked better. So I was really worried that, you know, we get halfway through this and, you know, somebody gets seriously injured. We're screwed. And even just, you know, someone gets a really good black eye, you know, he's shooting a match for episode 8. We haven't done any of the promo work yet, and he gets a black eye or a broken nose. It's like, okay, how are we going to do all the interview footage we need for the beginning of the season? So I was really concerned. And he had some, you know, professional makeup people there that if, you know, if there was one guy that did get a black eye that they had to makeup up for his promos and stuff, so you couldn't tell he had, you know, a bit of a shiner before he actually earned the shiner. So yeah, we were really fortunate that we didn't have any real disasters as far as, again, you know, something breaking in the ring to slow down our, you know, we broke the bottom rope once that was only a, you know, a 20-minute fix, and there was you know, a few other things, but on the whole, nothing that really fell apart disaster wise although because it was, again, shot more like a movie, and the majority of the crowd were extras that were, you know, paid to be there. The first time there was, you know, again, you know, cut, you know, can we redo that dive? Again, the old school of me was just cringing, and I'm going, God, thank God Jim Cornette's not here. Because, and it was, you know, even just some of it was, you know, the cameras weren't where they needed to be, and everything else. So there was a couple times where they, or again, even if the match ended, it's like, okay, we really missed the dive. Can we just get the guys out here, put the one guy on the floor, do the dive spot again, and edit it together later?
Sure.
And that, you know, there was, you know, there was a few of us that were like, this just seems wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But with it being the way it was, and even, you know, obviously there was no kayfabe involved at this stage of the game, because at some points too, they were reminding the crowd, okay, disregard what you saw yesterday. This hasn't aired yet, so you still don't like this person, so make sure you react negatively to him, because the crowd was, you know, given instruction on what they needed to do.
I see. That was my next question, actually.
And it was done really well. Like, as far as being, again, predominantly a fake crowd, they came across really well. Again, he was smart in that he got some wrestling fans to be there and really encourage the extras to follow the lead of the people that know what they're doing and are wrestling fans. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't WCW Saturday Night or, you know, the stuff that they used to shoot at Disney where they've got the applause sign and the boo sign and there's just a bunch of people from the park going yay when they're told to, and everything gets the same reaction. It really was a lot more of an authentic crowd that got into certain people more than others. Because the, again, if there's 200 people sitting in a group in one area and there's 25 legitimate wrestling fans that are there to have fun and know they want to be rowdy, they'd react accordingly and the rest would just pick up and follow. So I thought the crowd came off quite good. By the end of the day, they were getting a little too into chants to entertain themselves, I think. We had to keep reminding them that's like, you know, we prefer a little bit more yay and boo and a little less, you know, chanting this and chanting that, because it seemed like they started getting to the point where they were entertaining themselves. But on the whole, I thought it came across really well. Again, I didn't get to see a lot of the footage back to see production-wise how the whole arena, for lack of a different word, and again, it's not an arena setup, so to speak, all turns out. But, you know, from what I understand, that's Jeff's forte, and he's really good at, and the matches turned out, you know, I thought really good. And again, I'm usually a pretty anal retentive person with details and stuff, and I thought on the whole, all the matches were quite excellent. The tag team guys that had to do the tag team, predominantly more of the tag team matches and stuff, I thought really stepped up and did good stuff, without, you know, nearly as much direction as I was hoping to get them. yeah, and I became a big fan of a few new people. So
now the wrestlers themselves, were they given a script before tapings, or did everybody show up and get told what to do once they were there?
Most people had some degree of a Skype or a phone call, or again, if they were Southern California people, had met with Jeff in person.
I see.
And were given a rundown on what they were going to be. I don't think anybody, again, probably more me than anybody, but even I didn't have a full, they knew what they were doing, but they didn't know what the whole project was.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if you were going to be in the project, and just, you know, as a bad example, you were going to be the evil dentist, you know, he would sit down and explain what he wanted out of you, and as a evil dentist, you're going to feud with this guy that's got bad teeth. And, you know, so everyone had their own little, again, I hate using the word, but storyline, and had that explained, but nobody really knew the big picture. Again, probably me more than anyone, because I did get the full copy of the script and went over it with Jeff on, you know, several conference calls and stuff. But, you know, so everybody had a bit of an idea so that they knew, you know, what costume they needed, what their character or personality was supposed to be, because everyone was given new names, new characters, if you will. Again, several of them were not, you know, big stretches from where they were before, just other than a slight name change. So, you know, everyone had an idea going in sort of where they were going and what they were doing. Again, with a few last-minute changes, like the week before, there was a couple no-shows we had to alter for, which is a bit of a panic for Jeff and I, because I'm assuming I can stooge them off, but Sean Spears, who worked in WWE Developmental for a little while, I think he's from Ontario, he was supposed to be a part of the project, and then something fell through with him, and Prince Devitt was supposed to be a part of the project. And, you know, Jeff had actually did a fair bit of work immigration-wise to get it done, and then at the last minute, New Japan kiboshed that. So, like, literally, like, 3 days before we were getting ready to go down there, you know, Prince Devitt's off the table. Mm. So it was a bit of a last-minute shuffle and rewrites and changes and alterations to a few characters, but, you know, managed to pull it all together and put it on, so...
All right, we got to get into some of the other topics here. We may not have time for questions today, everybody, but if we don't, keep the thread open, and we'll get into them on the next show once we get caught up. But you, of course, the kibosh on UFC, in fact, after the Chael Sonnen situation. And I haven't actually read this week's Observer, so I'm not sure if this is in here. I presume it is. But Chael Sonnen, who, of course, fought in Texas a couple of weeks ago, beat and destroyed, actually, Brian Stann. Chael Sonnen was not, in fact, tested by the Texas State Athletic Commission at that pay-per-view. And presumably you have got word of that?
Yeah, I did. I received an email informing me of the details, and I was, of course, quite pissed off about it. It just amazes me, because I'd also had a few... words on Twitter with a few people when I think it was Paul Lazenby mentioned the post-match promo he did and everything else, and it's like, I will never buy a pay-per-view with Chael Sonnen on it if I ever even go back to purchasing MMA. And there was a few people, it's like, oh, he served his sentence, it's the, you know, you're being a jerk. And it's like, well, he sort of served his sentence, and, you know, Texas was a bit of a just-in-case hedging our bets so we don't have problems with what he did. And then when I find out that they didn't even bother testing him, it's like, how you don't test the guy who, you know, is just coming back off a suspension for a drug failure is beyond me. And I'd heard, actually, that Texas wasn't going to test anybody. And UFC actually insisted, and they tested, I guess, the four people that were in title fights. But oddly enough, UFC did not insist on testing Sonnen, which, again, to me, is a huge indictment of Dana and UFC, that you would think it important you include... the guy who's just coming back off a drug suspension, especially considering the damage he could have done to the sport. If he'd have beat Anderson Silva and then subsequently failed his drug test, it's like, you know, that entire division and title just gets flushed down the toilet as far as credibility, and that, what, you give it back to the guy that lost and he's now your champion. So, you know, to me, not testing him on that show was just a huge indictment on Dana's legitimate stance on drugs in UFC, and again solidified my resolve of staying away. And actually, because there's a lot of names that I know and like, it's like, I would probably buy the UFC show this weekend, even with the GSP being pulled off it, You know, because I've always been a fan of BJ Penn, and him and Nick Diaz would probably be a good fight. I love Roy Nelson, so him and Krokop, I believe, you know, would be a match I'd like to see. I'd be interested in seeing Congo and Mitrione. You know, so there's a lot of fights on there I'd like to see. I would probably spending my money on this show if it wasn't for the my continued anti-drug stance and my chael sun and steroid obsession. And again, don't send me hate mail. If you want to see the show and don't care that he failed his test, then do what you want. But it just annoys me. And again, I'm going to continue to stick to my I'm not watching UFC or MMA. And I just can't believe they didn't test the guy that's coming off a drug failure.
I don't know if you necessarily blame UFC for not testing Chael. I mean, they didn't. I think the story is Texas would not have tested anybody. And UFC said, well, you've got to test. We want you to test the fighters. And so they chose to test Edgar and Maynard, since they were in the main event, and Aldo and Florian, since they were also a title fight. And those are the only ones they tested. They didn't test Chael before, after, at all. He just was not tested. So I don't know if you can necessarily blame UFC for that. They don't get to choose who gets tested and who does not.
Yeah, okay, but I think if I was suggesting they test some people, I would have strongly recommended they test him. But you know what, and again, maybe I'm, you know, just completely out to lunch, but, you know, even if they're not going to test, it's like, Jesus Christ, test the guy yourself if you have to, just to show some degree of good faith or something. The guy's coming back off a drug failure, questionably early from the drug failure, considering his whole license ran out and you're afraid to get him licensed in California because he could get turned down. It's like, at least do something to show you're trying.
All right. Speaking of boycotts, a potential boycott of Raw is coming up in the life of Lance Storm.
Yeah, I don't want to call it a boycott. I made the comment on Twitter, actually. Storm_wrestling on Twitter, if you care. Just that if Monday ends up being yet another Let's Embarrass JR on national TV segment, that I'm going to take a break for a while. And again, it's not a boycott, it's not a stance, it's just, you know what, I'm not enjoying the show when they do that, so I'm just going to take a break. And there's a possibility, I'm not going to say for sure, but if it does end up, I find it an offensive, you know, Michael Cole embarrassing JR and humiliate JR on the show, I might take a few weeks and I might actually try Impact. And I might, you know what, if I did not enjoy watching Raw, then the following week I'm going to watch Impact and not Raw.
My God.
And if Impact annoys the living shit out of me, then maybe I'll go back to Raw, or, again, I might take a few weeks from both. But I have so much respect for JR as a person and for what he does, and it's frustrating enough that they don't use the most qualified and most gifted person at his job doing his job. But again, that is their choice. But if you're just going to put him on to humiliate him, I don't see how it generates money, and I don't find it enjoyable. So I'm not going to watch it. So that's just my thing. Because, again, I watch Raw primarily because I enjoy wrestling and want to watch wrestling. And if it ends up being just a, hey, let's embarrass JR, then you know what? It's not enjoyable for me anymore. And I've got a lot of things going on in my life, you know, with kids and a wife and my school and, you know, looking after my mom and my family, that I'm not going to waste 2 hours if the predominant effort of those 2 hours is just to humiliate a man. You know what? I'll go watch a Be a Star ad and look at stuff that doesn't bully people.
Well, the show takes place in Atlanta, so I guess a lot of this depends on whether or not they consider Atlanta JR's hometown.
Yeah, I think they even mentioned it's, you know, your old stomping grounds. It's like, really? You're going to mention his WCW commentary from, what, 93?
The early 90s, yes.
The early 90s. It's like, boy, you're really going on a stretch to say this is his stomping grounds. But, you know, I don't expect JR to come out victorious and get the desk back, although that would be my choice. But if it does end up being a segment where, you know what, getting JR back to do this thing with Cole pulls a rating, and they don't just humiliate the living hell out of him, then fine. Again, it is a work, and, you know, everyone's been humiliated in a segment here or there, but, you know, with the stink face and everything else. And Vince, to his credit, has been humiliated on TV as much as anybody. But again, you know, if it's serving a long-term angle and actually drawing money, that's one thing. If it's just a, you know, hey, we can get a 0.2 point bump in the rating for a quarter hour, let's embarrass JR, then, you know, I have no use for it.
All right, a spoiler alert. Not that nobody listening to this doesn't know by now, but James Storm has lost the title to Bobby Roode, which actually took place before they even shot the angle for Bobby Roode getting another title shot. But Roode broke the beer bottle over his head, injured him. As noted on last night's Observer Radio, Storm could be out until lockdown, which I doubt they've got that much patience. I think the whole thing is, I guess it could be worse, but that doesn't mean it's any good, you know? They rush through so many different things. They burn through so many months' worth of potential storylines in a matter of days. And James Storm, who won the title for the first time, and the crowd was into it, and they were hot for him, now he's gone until mid-2012. I think the whole thing is, I don't want to say poorly thought out, because that would indicate there was a lot of thought put into this, and clearly there wasn't.
Yeah, the one exception I want to take, and is just because I just listened to you and Dave, it was the last, whatever the show you were talking about it anyway, and Dave meant, well, it got over huge in the building. And as soon as he said that, I wanted to reach out and strangle him. Because, again, perhaps he's right, but I would be willing to bet dollars to donuts it didn't get over huge in the building, it got a reaction. And again, it's the difference between getting over and drawing money and getting over and getting a pop. It's like, I have no doubt when he hit him in the face with a beer bottle or the back of the head, whatever the hell, he hit him with a beer bottle and won the title, that there was a reaction in the building. But I find it hard to believe that it got over to the angle where it's really going to mean anything. Where, again, if they had done a several-month build and really got us behind James Storm as a babyface and, you know, built up the frustration of Roode, where we understood and could relate to the frustration or his motivation with turning heel, but... Again, I haven't been watching him back, but again, I still follow and listen to, you know, you and Dave cover the shows, so I still stay in touch. But, you know, all of that work into, you know, putting Bobby Roode over as a baby face and his wife and his kids and everything else and the friendship with him and James Storm, and, you know, not a single inkling of a hint whatsoever, and then just out of the blue, he smashes him in the head with a beer bottle and wins the title. It's like, how does anybody care? Like, you can react to it, but it doesn't ring true, and like you say, it should have been months. You know, where you could have, over the months, you know, have him getting jealous over the fact that, you know, Storm ended up getting the title instead of him. And, you know, they burned through 4 months of stuff in two weeks. Although I did, because it was, and I'm actually considering, and maybe if I say it here, there's no point, but I was actually debating on texting a few people in TNA for verbiage for Bobby. Because Dave's big thing was, you know, it's that winning that title for that first time. You know what I mean? And they've done it with both of them now, and it's like James Storm's going to chase, but he's already won it. To me, the promo that Bobby Roode has to cut now, and it's the old UFC promo. I remember GSP talking about it. You're not really a champion until you've defended the title. And since James Storm has not ever successfully defended the title, Bobby Roode can say he's not a real champion.
Sure.
And it sort of at least gives James Storm something to accomplish he hasn't accomplished yet. Where he's got to win the title and then successfully defend it, so that it gives him something. Because like you say, it's like once you've won it once, it doesn't mean nearly as much. Okay, he's going to chase his partner now to get something he's already had before. But there is that one line that if Bobby Roode used it in his promo, especially once Bobby Roode has successfully defended it, I'm assuming they're not putting AJ over, although, again, who knows, maybe they will. But assuming that Storm successfully defends the title, then he can lay claim to being a legitimate champion where where James Storm was, you know, a guy that got lucky once and lost the title before he ever had a chance to defend it, and really play up the fact that, you know, James was a failure. He was never a real champion, which I think would, again, especially when you consider the means by which he won it, they should be able to really build up that match coming back. But, you know, had they given us a chance to get behind James Storm far more as a babyface first, and then let us, you know, feel the frustration that Bobby Roode had, leading to his turn. That, again, I think there could have been, he could have been turning on him at lockdown rather than James making his return at lockdown. But
I'm just amazed at, like, between James Storm's promos leading up to Bound for Glory and the match he had with Kurt Angle, which was like a breakthrough match for him, and the reaction he got when he won the title on TV last week, and the whole post match as well, where he offered the match to Rude, or the belt to Rude, and Rude said no, you deserved it. I mean, this is the hottest that James Storm has ever been. And your idea is, we are now going to take him off TV for 6 months. I mean, it just, my mind cannot even comprehend the idiocy of this.
Yeah, it is way too soon to do it. But also, too, it's the hottest he's ever been, but I don't see any reason why there isn't another two or three logs you can throw on the fire and really let this guy be something.
Sure.
And again, as much as we're bitching, I'm thrilled to death that both, him and Bobby are given a bit of a chance, although I really hope that their program is made to be the main one, because there's nothing worse than we're putting the title on him, and then it's the secondary match behind, again, Hogan and whatever, because that's the kiss of death, because then they don't get over, and then they're blamed for not getting over, even though they were never in the spotlight. We've seen several world champions in WWE booked that way. But it's great that they get the chance, but yeah, they really could get some mileage behind James Storm for a while. And again, really let Bobby Roode stew over it. You could really. And I listened to, it's a little bit more further back, but I like listening to Wrestling Weekly with Les Thatcher. I really have a lot of respect for Les. And, the one comment that he made, too, though, is if Storm's going to be the top guy, he needs to stop drinking beer on his way to the ring. And I agree completely with him. It's like, if you're world champ, you need to take things more serious.
Yeah.
And again, I can hear a lot of people thinking, it's like, well, Steve Austin drank beer. It's like, Steve Austin drank beer after. He didn't go to the ring to defend the world title with a buzz. He drank beer after, and I think that's a real important thing.
I understand what everybody's saying there, but to me, it's almost like, okay, I don't know. The James Storm character, if he just takes a swig of beer on the way to the ring, he ain't buzzed. You know what I mean? Like, if he's backstage and you just see, like, four empty beer bottles by his feet and he's drinking a fifth one as he's talking about the match that's upcoming, then it's like, okay, this is wacky. But if the guy's gimmick is a beer-drinking redneck, and on the way to the ring he cracks open a beer and he takes a sip and then throws the beer bottle in the air, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and again, I haven't been watching lately, but I know there used to be, when him and Rude were standing backstage in promos, he always had a beer in his hand, and he's in the locker room. It's like, you get the impression that he's drinking all day.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not a world champion.
Yeah, probably not.
So,
world champions, they do a lot of different things. Some of them can still beat everybody.
Very true, but I think this is something that I've argued and debated with everything else, and it's the people that think psychology is overrated. It's like, why not try to appeal to everybody? I don't think there's anyone that likes James Storm and his beer drinking gimmick that will stop liking him if he only drinks beer after his matches. But there's going to be the Les Thatchers of the world and the Lance Storms of the world that will like him less if he doesn't. And it's the same thing that I talk about with psychology and angles making sense. It's like, I don't believe there is any fan that will go, I'm not watching that match because it made sense. But there are some people that will stop watching because it doesn't. And people have to remember that having it make sense doesn't mean there aren't going to be spots and moves. You just need to put your spots and moves in the right order. And I think you should appeal on as wide a base as possible. And, having a guy drink beer before he goes to the ring, I think, is a bad idea. Especially with the amount of DUIs and other issues that we have in both companies right now, promoting your top guy as a beer drinker and a bit of a drunk is probably not the best.
Well, sure. That I can understand. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up for today, everybody. As noted, if you had questions in the thread, just keep filling up that thread, and maybe we'll do a whole Q&A show one of these days when it's a slow news week, which if Lance decides to take some time off Raw and continues his UFC boycott, we have a lot of slow news weeks for the next couple of months here, but you never know. So,
although it will be a good and interesting show the first time I watch Impact again.
That's true. That's true when the Impact boycott is off. So let's make sure that we get all the plugs in here. You mentioned your Twitter, which, of course, I'm very interested in. A huge fan of Twitter. So let's get that out there, plus the website as well, many of them.
Yeah, stormwrestling.com will take you to my site with my commentaries and so forth, which I'm overdue to get something posted, I know. But as you can understand, it's been a hectic week for me. But there's also the Storm Wrestling Academy page, which you can get to through stormwrestling.com or stormwrestlingacademy.com. For my school, my next session starts in January. I'm about halfway through, or a little bit more than that, halfway through the current session. We're going strong. And again, if you do sign up, you not only get trained by me, but I'm the one in the ring with you. You get to have a match with me or more. Sometimes I get a couple matches with students by the time the class is over, which is really cool here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Again, Storm_wrestling on Twitter, Lance Storm on Facebook. I've got Storm Warning, an ebook out on Amazon.com. If you search Lance Storm on Amazon.com, you can find my ebook. As well as I'll plug my daughter's two ebooks. She's got Bond Enforcement and Drink to That. They're two novellas out for like $1.99 a piece. If you're interested in checking those out, I would greatly appreciate it. She would appreciate the support. I write for Fighting Spirit Magazine, which is in the UK and I think might be available in the States, although I'm not 1,000% sure. But you can subscribe online and check that out, Fighting Spirit Magazine. And I think that's probably about all I got going right now.
Amazing. Is there anything that you don't do, Lance?
I don't know. Get a good night's sleep.
Well, there is that. And for those of you out there that are listening to this for free today as your weekly free show, Lance Storm is on every other week here on this program. And you can always check out the school. StormWrestling.com is the place to go. If you click on that page, there's information on the school and his personal website. And a number of students have been signed at WWE. So if it is your goal, if it is your dream to be a professional wrestler, there is no better place to go than Calgary, Alberta, Canada. With Lance Storm, you get in the ring with Lance. He beats your ass personally. It's not just some wacky trainer. So that's the place to go, especially whether you're male or female. It's a very important point because I don't have all the stats in front of me like I should. But I believe at least an equal number of guys and gals have been signed to WWE that have gone through Lance. So if you're a female looking to get into the business, it's a great place to go as well. So check it out, everybody. And of course, thanks, Lance, as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening. A brand new Brian and Vinny show tonight. Freeloaders, too bad for you. And, of course, tomorrow, brand new After Dark, we'll be talking physics and science and stuff that I, quite frankly, don't know a whole lot about. So it's going to be a fun show. Talk to you again after a while.